This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
DirecTV Stream has the most local MLB games, which means it's never been easier to
root for the home team.
So whether you're rooting for a or a
safe
or even a
strike three
or a
it's out of here,
root for your home team with DirecTV Stream, the most MLB games, period. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Ghosts and Goblins, welcome to the show and to our first ever freestanding creature feature movie review.
Yay.
Ooh. So tonight we are reviewing Brandon Cronenberg's new film, Infinity Pool, and we're going to dive right in.
This movie is considered a science fiction horror, and it tells the story of a struggling writer named James Foster and his wife, who are on vacation, and they are then involved in a horrible car accident and discover a dark secret that leads to an even darker adventure into depravity. And I would even say madness, and then even deeper into depravity.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is Brandon's third feature film following 2020's Possessor and 2012's Antiviral. So let's start with asking if you all felt Infinity Pool fit in with Brandon's body of work. And if you did, how did it also manage to stand on its own as something new and original?
I'll start. So I've never seen Antiviral, and I've heard things about it and that it's a little rough around the edges. But, you know, my introduction to the Brandon Cronenberg world was absolutely through Possessor, and I love Possessor. We reviewed Possessor on one of the previous episodes of the show, and I really kind of fell in love with his way to kind of twist and distort reality. And Infinity Pool gave us some of that same type of distortion. Halfway through, when I was in these dream sequences and all these weird kind of like filming through diamonds or gems, it was like very 60s and psychedelic. I was like, this is kind of mind-bending. This had the Brandon Cronenberg stamp on it. So for me, I felt like it was very much from his world.
I'll agree with you that in terms of the visual style of Infinity Pool, I think that it fits really, really nicely next to Possessor, those sort of like psychedelic visuals, or even the sort of flesh kind of like melding with the masks and things like that that you see in both films. And I think that they share a lot of connective tissue there, as well as in there is a little bit of body horror in this, but I think this is definitely more of, I love that you said madness as a theme, because I think that that's absolutely the key to Infinity Pool versus Possessor, let's say.
For sure. It was giving post-production vibes for me. The madness of post-production vibes.
I thought it was successful in establishing his vibe, but also, you know, standing on its own. Like, it's definitely a different movie than Possessor.
Yeah.
But it does feel like, okay, I know what this guy's movies are starting to feel like, and I like them. And so, yeah, I think it did a good job of that, but still not being repetitive.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like one of the key differences between this and Possessor would be the tone. For me, I found myself, and I know I'm a sicko, I'm a weirdo, but I was like grinning ear from ear. I was like, this movie is a comedy. Like, there are so many times where I was like,
shut up.
Oh my
movie
God.
Was not
yes,
a comedy.
The motherfucking
no.
is. Okay,
it only turned into a comedy when Mia Goth had like chicken grease on her face and she was like boozy Susie-ing it up at the end.
Yes.
Like,
oh my
faster.
God. Okay, and like big ass spoiler, like at the very end of the movie where James, played by Alexander Skarsgård, puts the third urn into the suitcase, I was like, oh my God, camp, honey.
Yeah, it did start to get a little Death Becomes Her there.
Yeah,
like, okay.
Exactly. Totally, that was the humor. And I mean, again, though, I know that I'm sick because I was watching it in a theater and everyone around would be like, oh, and I'm like, yes, queen, oh, I gotta go off sick.
Okay, so did you all enjoy the film? Let's start with that.
Why don't you go ahead, Ian? Because I think we can all sense in the forest here that you loved it.
What if I was like, no, I hated it?
I believe it.
Well, get ready.
Get ready. Ooh. Well, I feel like maybe I will be the odd one out, which I'm totally fine with defending. I loved Infinity Pool. I will say, though, and not that, you know, you have to compare an artist's work to previous work, I would consider Possessor to be a better quality film and higher up on my personal ranking.
What'd you think, Track?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. That tone, that dark, almost, I would say, building into hopelessness, right? Mm-hmm. I thought it was very effective. Like, it definitely took me on a mental journey. It took me out of my body. I was not distracted thinking about other things. I was sucked into the movie, which is unusual.
No, that is, knowing you the way I do, that is definitely saying something.
Yeah, so I was engaged, so I thought it was effective at that. And it was an interesting story. It had a lot of messaging. I don't think it beat you over the head, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. You can make more of it if you want to, or you could not. So what about you?
I liked it. Lowercase L. Ooh. I didn't love it. I did enjoy it. I definitely was like kind of pulled in. I was engrossed. I was invested. And I didn't feel like it was beating me over the head with complex concepts too. I'm like, wait, pause. What's happening? But I like movies when I have to do a little bit of work. I like to think while I'm watching a film and sort of figure out what its creator is trying to tell us. But it got to a point where I was like, this starting to feel a little bit self-indulgent. And then annoying.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's interesting that you say that because I agree with you, but I would say that that's one of the reasons why I really loved it. I felt as though I was watching a movie that was spiraling out of control. I was like, oh my gosh, how can this get any worse? And it just kept getting worse and worse. And the situation that the main character was in just kept getting more and more horrible and grotesque.
It's weird because you want to talk about sick. This is really sick. I almost felt like there was a bit of hope in that, how much darker it was getting.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Because you could start to see, okay, there is a way that you could come out of this on the other side better than when you entered this movie.
Sure. I think that the movie almost leads you to believe that that's going to happen. You know, I think that a big element of the plot is, what are you supposed to believe? It's kind of like the unreliable narrator trope on 1,000.
So let's back up to when the story starts to really sink in and you realize what's happening with these clones. Now, this is not something that we would accept probably in another movie, like, right, the technology to be like, in 1 hour, I can make a duplicate of you. And there's no suggestion that it's anything magical happening. So this is purely scientific. So did that sit okay with you all and how fast it happened?
I loved it. I love that part of it. It took us out of the world of, we have to rationalize all of these mechanics and let's figure out how this happened. That's not the point. The point is, you can do this. Now, what does it mean that you can have a version of yourself that you can sacrifice for your misgivings in place of your actual body?
So why, if that's the case, and maybe you'll answer this, why do we accept that in a movie like this, where, you know, a different movie we would be like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, why?
I think for me, and I wrote this down, is I actually really love this particular, I'll say, type of sci-fi, which I find to be accessible yet alien.
I guess it's the way it's done, right? Maybe it's the way it's handled. So when you did start to realize what was happening, which I don't know if you all agree, but I thought it was really interesting. You know, I was like, are they going to do this? They're doing it. And then he's watching it. And then, I mean, of course, the first thing I'm thinking is, well, you've swapped. Like, you're the clone that watched yourself killed. But did it bother you how frequent they started to? And then, I mean, that's part of the story, but did that bother you?
I didn't even question who is the double until the main character is hanging out with all the rest of the depraved people. And they're like, well, I have to ask, do you think that your double was actually killed or whatever? And I was like, oh my God, that's the crux of the film.
Did you think that before that question was posed in the movie?
Not really. I just sort of accepted at face value that, like, our protagonist is still himself.
He smirked.
He enjoyed it.
That's when I was like, it's the clone. Like, I immediately thought it was the clone.
Oh, I saw the smirk more as unlocking something inside of him.
I love this. Because oftentimes this happens for me, I'll have feelings about something and I won't really discover how I truly feel until I start talking about it. And this is kind of unlocking a lot of doors for me, because we're questioning, did the clone die? Did the actual person go on to live? Did he enjoy it? Did the clone enjoy it? Shortly after that scene, he hides his own passport because he doesn't want to leave. And he's betraying his wife's trust. And then we quickly get to the scene where...
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Are you just realizing that he just hid his own passport?
I would okay, because here.
D. Yes.
We're unlocking doors as
listen,
we go along.
I'm like, here's what I'm thinking, right? I'm like, why would Mia Goth hide his passport under the sink?
Oh. I'm like, I don't know. Why would
am
she?
I qualified to review this? No. I'm like, no, I can get it. I mean, there's so much about this movie that I have dug into because it really made you think something so stupid like that. But let me ask you this, because we don't have a ton of time to dig into every aspect. But did you think that this was a clear allegory to say, okay, this guy was in a relationship. His wife had this was sort of the dominant figure. He was a failed writer. He, you know, was just a coffee house worker. Her dad was rich. She says she has daddy issues, this, that, and the other. This guy's life is kind of a failure, right? And he's subservient to her. And do you think that this was really where he's writing the story in his head and he sort of reinvents himself on vacation? Very high. People do that all the time. And at the end, all this just really happened in his head.
I think that the events of the film are actually taking place. And I think that the scene at the end where they're all just sort of talking about the mundanity of life or, you know, oh, well, when I'm mad at him, I just rearrange the house. I found that to be one of the scariest parts of the movie because I think that it shows, for me, one of the big themes is like, how far down the line do you have to go before you start to lose what makes you human?
I think it's also happening. Like these events are actually happening and he kills his own clone, kind of destroying his previous self. And maybe he had to do that away from his wife and away from her influence. And I think another element that I noticed and kind of appreciated was a lot of the stuff in the movie was very indicators of ritual. Intoxication played such a huge part in like the sex rituals. And they got really intoxicated and went on these quests. Let's go retrieve this medal. Let's go strike and kill our enemy, which was the warden. Why get so wasted to do that? And then they inhale these local like hallucinogens and then have like another like psychological like mind-bending vision. And I think this was his vision quest to kill his old self and come out on the other side someone new.
But
right?
But,
but then he ends up staying in the monsoon, which is the annoying part. Like you think you know. There's so much misdirection in this movie.
But that's why I interpreted it as it wasn't really happening. To me, I felt like there was a couple of clues because he's like, I'm a writer. I'm writing this story. And, you know, I don't know. I must felt like that was like his story that he wrote on this trip. And he took these mundane characters around him and gave them these wild personalities.
I think that's so cool. Like, so yeah. Fascinating as an angle, as a possibility.
As someone that does that all the time, that's what I thought was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think that it is actually happening. However, I love that reading of it because, like I said earlier, I think that one of the biggest strengths of Infinity Pool is the unreliable narrator trope where you really can't believe anything that's happening. You know, even as a viewer, we're with our protagonist until he gets cloned. And then we lose him for a span of time. And then the next time that we see everyone in the jail cell, they all get murdered or, you know, they all get punished by the law or however you want to call it. And then you realize that like, oh, wait, our perspective has shifted. Like, I thought that these were our protagonists, but instead they're actually the clones. Or are they? Question mark.
So let's talk about like what was something that you didn't enjoy about it or something that you had a problem with it. My first issue, and this is really with the base design of the movie, is that it's another story about a guy and his problem. You know, this married guy, this married straight guy and his problems, which just drives me nuts. I just feel like we've seen it so many times and I don't know why we can't change it up a little bit. This straight guy struggle, woe is me, I really don't care. But what I don't know, what about you all?
Not only that, he's white, he's privileged, he marries into opportunity and all that. I think I've stated mine. Like for me, I think we went a little bit too far down the rabbit hole. I'm all for a mind bending adventure. I love libertine orgy posses, like covens of depraved people. So many things could have happened in this movie. I actually think it's like a feather in its cap that we're talking so much about, well, it could have been this, and I was thinking this, and oh, is that what happened? I think that's a real success, right?
So because we didn't talk about Hocus Pocus 2 like this, you think maybe it's not as good of a
movie?
No,
I live for Hocus Pocus 2.
Oh, yeah, Hocus Pocus 2.
I live for
Hocus
Pocus
2,
yes.
Top tier.
What about you, Ian? Did you have any issues with it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that my issues with it are just kind of a personal preference and an expectation. I feel like based on the marketing and based on what I'd come to expect from Possessor, I thought that it was going to be much worse of a watch, which I know is kind of a weird thing to be like, oh, I want it to just be horrible. And it was. Like, there's a lot of depravity and there's a lot of horrible things that happen. But I did think that for the concept, it could have been pushed a little further. Like, I was almost expecting it to be like, okay, cool. The orgy scene, which then leads to the hospital, which then leads to just worse and worse and worse. And it's like, how far can we go until Alexander Skarsgård has to kind of pull back? And instead, he pretty quickly, like, once he's confronted with him beating up his own double, he pulls back. And I thought, okay, I'll accept that because, hi, he's supposed to be a human being. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm almost expecting a Clockwork Orange level of, like, this is getting to a sickening place.
You wanted him to fuck himself.
Oh, absolutely.
Well,
yes, I did.
It could have went there.
No, I thought he was going to.
That actually leads me to my next question, which was about the sexual tones. And they were interesting. They were, like, definitely non-traditional. And speaking of that, I absolutely thought, you know, when they brought in the guy with the bag over his head and they were pissing on him and all, I thought, because it looked like he was unbuckling his pants, you know, it was to pee on him, I thought that he was going to fuck himself. But, which would have been amazing if he did. But
director's cut.
Ooh.
Director's uncut.
Ooh. I knew that was coming.
She's from Finland, I think.
Wow. Oh my God.
Let him know, Jack. But wait, Let him know, Jack.
I'm like, wait. So,
what kind of weirdo would have a guide of which countries people are cut and uncut in?
But
I
then do we like visit the house in Barbarian to see what Bill's working with too? I'm like a little brother.
Hey, okay, we had a suckling scene here.
Oh my God, I mentioned you.
I was like, Ian.
Yes. Literally me. Oh my God. Okay. Well, just to say it, like, Mama, when she whipped that titty out and smeared that blood on that areola, I was like, iconic mother. Anyway, wow. But so, yeah, in terms of the sexual content, like, I did think that it was boundary pushing in the sense that I don't think that this is the type of sexual content that you typically see in a theater setting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I thought it made it even more interesting. I like that it pushed the boundaries because it feels more like adult and real.
It felt adult and real. Yeah, okay, to me, it didn't feel like we had kitten gloves on and we're going to handle this sensitive material in a theater in America. It was like presented just as rough and as raw as all of the other mind-bending, almost experimental concepts where we were just led to accept cloning. We're going to accept bloody areolas. We're going to accept casual hand jobs where we're seeing urine and cum on the ground at a beach and in such a like a scene where it didn't really belong. You didn't see that coming at all.
Well.
And it made me well, you saw it only when the cum was hitting the ground.
Ooh.
But it made me just accept it as I'm like, these are adult concepts that we can all handle. And I kind of respect Brandon Cronenberg for presenting them in the way that he did. We saw infidelity, pansexuality, references to homosexuality, bisexuality, like all the bodily fluids across the board in a casual way. And it was part of the film that I really adored that we had that kind of inclusion because there was a lot of scary elements, like atmospherically. Like, I didn't say this earlier, but I want to say it now. The scariest part of the film to me was the atmosphere. Like, I felt like so many different things could happen. I was most nervous when we see the main characters get arrested. No, it was right after the hand job, but right before the accident and before they get incarcerated, where that accident happened and you were warned about like what could happen in the countryside for tourists. I was so nervous for them. Just the threat was just looming and I was so tense.
I'm going to back you up on that wholly. And I'm also going to back the film up 2 or 3 minutes because I feel like I was affected by the drunk driving scene in a way that I haven't been affected by a scene in a movie in a long time. Like when Albin says, oh, I can't drive, and Alexander Skarsgård's character says, oh, well, I'll drive. Immediately, I was filled with this sense of dread. I was like, this is a nightmare. Like the acting is great. And then when the lights fail on the car, I was like, this is a literal nightmare happening.
The intensity just picks up because moments later they get incarcerated.
Oh,
they're brought into the prison. Em and James are then, you know, and it's talked about, you can't be arrested here. Like women get raped, then you go missing. That's what happens here. They get escorted into the prison and they're immediately separated in that moment. The actual terror.
Yeah.
Nothing to say that M wasn't cloned too and had their own, you know, I mean, you don't know. Like,
no,
because they said, well, women get raped here or whatever. So clearly that's not like, why would they be so respectful of her after what they did with him? And obviously they've done this to both women and men. So interesting.
And then too, I actually really love the way that I'll say that the narrative unfolds, but I guess narrative more in like a broader sense, because I think that you start the film kind of with like very, very humble beginnings of like, oh, this is a, it's a drama and we're in this, you know, fabulous foreign location. And then it becomes a sci-fi. And then you start to just uncover more and more about the world. And one of the things that I really loved is when they revealed, oh, we had you cloned so we could fuck with you. And I'm like, oh, so it's not just a like, hey, this only happens in a situation where you're being penalized for a crime. You could just buy a clone anytime you wanted. So who's to say that they haven't already purchased the clones? Like all the memories are the same. Like, mm-hmm. And that to me almost brought the horror to a cosmic kind of place.
So ultimately what, and obviously there's no wrong answer, but what did you think this film was about? Three sentences.
Vacation, all I ever wanted. Vacation, how do I get away? Period.
Amazing. Done. And a Go-Go reference in Infinity Pool, I live.
Ooh.
What did you think it was about?
I think Infinity Pool was about redefining yourself through ritual and a detachment from your normal world so that you can return anew.
But he did not inspire this change. It was forced upon him by the characters around him. So you're not really reinventing yourself, right? So why do you think that happened?
I'm going to take it to a tribal place. When we're growing up in, you know, in a tribe, things happen to you, whether you plan for them or not. Even as a man or as a boy, like kind of growing into your body or whatever, you go through ordeals and then you come out on the other side transformed. I think this was an ordeal for James.
I would agree with that. Like, I do see what you're saying, Drac, about how it's not necessarily the quest that he outlined for himself. It was more so the quest that he was kind of forced to go through. But I do feel like this film kind of sits in like a history of like transgressive kind of fiction where the only way to move forward is to like self-immolate, you know, destroy whatever it is that's holding you back. It was either, you know, make a choice. Like, would you rather die? You know, when Mia Goth is like, kill the dog. He had to, or it's either kill or be killed. So it's kind of like forced evolution.
It's giving Dracula fuckers.
Oh my God, it's giving extermination, honey.
The other characters sort of forced this change on him. So was their motivation, and this is just speculation, it's just for conversation, was it that they just wanted another character to join them, or what was it actually for his benefit so that he returns to his life and now he is no longer this subservient failure of a writer and now he... You know,
it could be even more other options, mm-hmm. but maybe both, maybe fuck.
Maybe fuck.
It could be.
So are they demons or angels?
We have this toy. We have this new acolyte. They don't know what we are. They don't even know what they are yet. So let's fuck with them in the way that we do. And if they succeed, they may become one of us and we can revisit with him and rejoice every year and do this to someone else. But if they fail, then they're just our
plaything forever.
Yeah, our little pleasure for a short time and then they're gone.
But you can't argue that ultimately he leaves better off than he showed up, right? I mean, they kept insisting that he was this failure and that he was this. And the whole point was, let's encourage him to stand up and kill
his
weaker
self. Show us your strength, James.
So why would that be advantageous for them?
Personally, I don't know that I would argue that he's better off. I think he's actually cosmically, existentially worse off. Like, there could not be a worse fate for this character, like locked in a prison that is, you know, infinite. But I do think that it's kind of like what Swan said, like, it's, you know, potentially for his benefit, but I also think that it's a sort of a commentary on class and wealth where these characters are so wealthy and so privileged that it literally does not matter what the outcome is. It's just fun for them. And it's fun because they can say, hey, like Swan said, okay, great. You know, we recognize that you are changed on the other side of this. And when we had this ordeal happen to us, we became changed too. So either A, we will put you through the rigors of this torture and you will come out like a depraved monster like we are, or you'll be our dog forever. And either way is cool with us. See you next year.
What's interesting, Drac, is you said, are they angels or are they devils? And in no way could I ever picture them angels until you said that.
Yeah,
and now you can, because
it's like us when we put people through extermination. We think we're mean, but we're really good.
Yeah,
like really good.
It's
for
all for
you.
Goodness, like granny goodness. No,
oh my God.
These characters, what I'm calling the, you know, the libertine orgy coven, they are helping him unlock his own barriers, the barriers that he like puts in his own way, kind of thing. So.
Yeah, like she's tormenting him on the hood of the car, and it's clearly. She's just trying to disrespect. She's trying to break him down into the point where he finally gives in and says, yes, I have got to overcome this treatment. Let me ask you this, just to kind of wrap up the conversation. Given the opportunity, would you do it?
Ooh.
What's the question? I need a full question.
You're
here.
In the jail. The contract is in front of you. And, but the difference is you know what's coming after, whereas he didn't know. He just didn't want to die. So he did it, you know? But if you knew what was coming, would you sign it and get cloned and go along with that process, or would you just be killed?
Right. I mean, I guess knowing what I know at the end of the film, like in my reading, is that he is essentially living in a purgatory of punishment. But I do see how they're also angels. I guess I would have to say no, because I do think that one of the things that I really loved about the movie is how these sorts of things change you as a person. You know, it's like you can't unshoot the gun. As James is participating and leading these like horrible things, he's literally mutating and becoming a different person, which I think is really cool, because they also link that to like the masks that they wear. You know, I don't know that I would sign myself up for that, because for me, the cosmic existential dread of like, am I a clone? And if I wanted to die, who's to say that they wouldn't just clone me and bring me back and be like, oh, well, you're weak, so now you must actually suffer, rather than just, you know, kind of suffering lightly in the background.
I found interpretation of the whole clone concept a little different, because I was really paying attention to the first clone, because I didn't realize that we were going to visit that over and over. So I'm like, I was like glued to the end of my seat. And it didn't seem capable of like fully having access to all of James's memories, relationships, the details. It really just was like, no, help me. All I kept saying was help me. And then it was slaughtered off. So I kind of consider them to have a little bit less in the mental faculty department. So if you were the clone, then you'd have some kind of like lower ability to think. And then would it matter? But taking that piece away, my answer would be yes. Like so easily and 100% yes, I would do it. Because I feel like what you're facing here, the biggest fear is like the inner workings and the darkest chambers like of yourself. So I don't know. That just kind of goes with the mantra of like who we are and how we live. And I even think in the real world that we all live in, the scariest things are like kind of on the inside. They're the hardest things to face.
I would absolutely do it, because it's almost an adaption of survival, right? At that point, you either choose to not survive, or you're like, well, I guess I'll go along with this and adapt and survive. I would do it because it would be interesting. I mean, otherwise, you'd just be dead, right?
Yeah, I guess. Although, I don't know, personally, if I had killed someone and the punishment was death, you know, and it was like, hey, you know, you have killed this person, you caused pain and suffering to their family, you can absolve yourself by flexing your privilege and your money. Like, I don't think that I could live with that. Like, I think that I would probably think about it all the time and rather be dead.
Well, you could get your head pissed on by three people instead.
Oh, okay, but wait, hold on. Is that a guarantee? Like, do I, like, when I sign...
Sorry, you're dead. You don't get to get peed on anymore.
No, wait. Is the piss clause there?
Yes, I said you would know what was going to happen to you.
I want to redo.
Okay. All right, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week for the next full installment of the Blay Brothers Creatures of the Night. If you'd like to attend a live taping of the podcast, you can get tickets to the Blay Brothers Dracula Titans Tour now at DraculaLive.com, where VIP ticket holders will be invited to a live taping of the show earlier in the evening. Until next time, uglies.